Hello and welcome to Defend Your Ship. I am your host, Stevie, and with me I have Raina over Skype. And her video just froze, so like hopefully she's still there. It's going to be a wild ride. You're still there, right?
I am still there, yes.
Great. We're going to just see what kind of audio we get from this. It's a mystery. I'm in quarantine because I'm sick with something that I can't get tested for. So here we are, just modern solutions to modern coronaviruses.
It's the end times, and we're going to make it through somehow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Make it through. So, Raina, what are you into this week while the world is ending?
So I watched both new episodes of Steven Universe yesterday.
And you
and
cried.
That was a I cried. Well, I didn't cry physically so much as my soul was crying.
That counts.
So for those spoiler alert. So if you want to skip over for like the next 5 minutes, you can. So the new Steven Universe episode, Steven Universe Future, in the first one, Together Forever, Steven decides that because he's nervous about his best friend and sort of girlfriend, Connie, going to college, that he's going to propose to her and see if they can fuse permanently. As Devani. And as you would expect from a 16-year-old boy proposing, it doesn't go well.
Yikes. That is heavy shit for a cartoon.
Well, it's basically... So Garnet, one of his gem moms, is a fusion of Ruby and Sapphire, who were two gems that were never supposed to fall in love and then fell in love. And so separately, both of them are like, go do it, do it, do it, do it. And so he comes up with this plan to basically meet Connie and bring her to the place they first met when they were kids. And he sets up this huge picnic.
Oh, no.
And he sings her a song
about
how he likes them, how he prefers like to be with her whenever he can. And then he proposes with a glow stick ring.
Oh, no. Oh, that's the path to heartbreak.
Like, super, super, like, adorable, innocent, young.
Oh, God.
Young Bab. Just not realizing what he's doing.
I can't watch. I'm not even watching and I can't watch.
And Connie's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And like, she doesn't turn him down outright. She's not like, no, you're crazy. Why would you do that? She's like, I love you, but I want to go off to college and live my own life for a while. And I'm not saying outright no, but this isn't a thing that can happen right now.
Yeah, that's very logical and mature of her. And I appreciate that they put that rejection on screen for young people to watch.
Like,
that show is always so much more like deep and good and smart and like, I don't know, brave about handling really terrible things.
Well, and, like, he does handle it, like, pretty well. Like, she's like, do we need to talk about this? And he's like, no, go back to studying for your entrance exams. Aww. I'll be fine. And then, like, basically just lays down and cries by himself.
Yeah, that's the appropriate response. Yeah.
I mean, at least he didn't, like, put his pain on Connie.
No, exactly. Yeah, like, he was a big enough dude to cry by himself and maybe hopefully seek some comfort from all of his moms later.
Well, Garnet was basically like, I'm here if you need me. And he's like, why didn't you stop me? You have future vision. And she's like, well, there wasn't a future where you didn't try to propose to Connie. And Sapphire and me are like the two most romantic people there are. So you had to go through it, buddy.
Oh, no.
You had to go through it.
I don't even know this guy. I don't even go here. Like, oh, that hurts.
And then the second episode is directly after he proposes to Connie. And so, like, he basically has been depressed, hasn't left the house. Nobody is around because the gems are still teachers at the school, at Little Homeward World School. And his dad has gone off to be a tour manager. And so he's basically in his own little depression. And his body, so, like, the theme of Steven Universe future is that he has been getting new powers as, like, a result of his trauma. Ooh. And his body starts, basically his body starts growing and shrinking without him being able to control it. And Connie calls him to, like, check on him and make sure he's okay. And he tries to be like, no, I'm fine. And so she brings him to his mom, who's a doctor. And his mom is basically like, well, so this is essentially a gem alien reaction to the fact that you have a half human body and you've gone through so much trauma as a child that you basically now have PTSD and anxiety because even small things you don't know. Your body is basically acting like you're still going through all this super stress that you went through before, except it's for small things.
Right, just so, like, real PTSD and anxiety.
Yeah, basically. She's like, what is causing this? And he basically has a panic attack because he realizes that Connie didn't tell her mom about the proposal.
Aww. And
he grows to the size of the room like Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, buddy.
And he's basically like, I need you to leave.
Oh, like, God.
Because you're causing me too much stress right now. It's just...
Oh, no. Like, so bold of this cartoon to be like, we are going to use our animating powers to give you a visual representation of PTSD and anxiety and a panic attack. Like, my God, they're professionals.
And his dad shows up because even though his dad was on tour, Connie called him and, like, a good father figure, Greg comes back and is like, no, you're my kid. You're important to me. I'm going to help you get through this.
Oh, God. I don't even know these people. And Greg seems like a good guy. Greg! Good guy Greg. He's good guy Greg.
I mean, he's not perfect. Like, no parent is.
Right, but is he a good guy?
He's a good guy.
I'll take it. I will take a trying dad. I will take that.
Like, basically, Connie's mom is like, have you ever gone to the doctor before? And he's like, no.
Whoops.
I grew up with aliens. And a dad that lived... at a car wash.
Yeah. That sounds more like a cartoon. But, like, it's amazing that this cartoon will have cartoon-ass shit happen and then have to address it and handle it in, like, a human way. In, like, a regular not-cartoon way.
That was really what was touching, is that, like, so Connie and her mom leave, and then Greg's like, tell me what's wrong. And, like, he actually has a heart-to-heart with his father where he's like, I proposed to Connie and she said no, and I feel like I feel terrible. Oh. And, like, that was kind of also the great thing. That's the part I forgot about the about Together Forever is that Garnet is like the person or people you like end up with, they're supposed to be your complement, not your other half. Another person can't complete you.
Jesus, cartoon. I'm so glad that like we're doing a better job of educating the next generation of kids through cartoons that will actually like punch you in the face. Because I feel like the only cartoon that I had, I wasn't allowed to watch cartoons, first of all, but the stuff that I did watch didn't have like discussions of your feelings and how to navigate them. And I even watched Avatar The Last Airbender when I was in like high school or college. So I missed out on so much emotional education. Kids, like these kids, they're going to be emotional natives. Forget digital natives. They're going to be like, we actually know how to talk about shit. That's even more dangerous. Like, can you imagine being like an old grandpa and having to have like how to talk to your friends lessons from like your toddler grandchildren? Because that's what's going to happen.
I mean, I think it also helps that like the creator, Rebecca Sugar, is like a gender non-conforming, queer, non-binary person.
Yeah. My people are doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. And so like, even though it's been very painful for Steven, and it's also given me a lot of personal feels as somebody that has been through similar things, it ends on like a high note of him just being taken care of by his dad, and his dad being like, no, you're more important than my job.
Aww.
And it was touching.
Well, I'm glad you've had a nice emotional start to your quarantine.
And that was all in just 22 minutes.
Jesus, they really fucking pack it in. God, like even therapy takes me 45 minutes. What the fuck?
So those were my emotions for
beautiful.
The
beautiful. Cool. Now you have to bite the bullet and ask me what I've been into, even though you know the answer.
What have you been into, Stevie?
Well, I've been into fan fiction for The Untamed. Which you might recognize The Untamed from our last two podcasts, because I can't shut up about it. I'm not sorry. Anyway, I read a fan fiction that was like a professional sports AU where, okay, so in the show, they're all like ghost hunters, kind of. They go out and they hunt spirits and shit. They call it night hunting because typically you'd hunt spoopy shit at night, but then even if you do it during the day, you still call it night hunting because it's more badass. So in this AU, night hunting is like a professional sport, and they have like night hunting world championships, and there's like night hunting at the Olympic Games. So the two main characters are like competitors, and at first they're rivals in these games. But then is it more than a rivalry? Is it more than a feeling? Yes, it is. So it's amazing. And it's also one of those great like multimedia AUs where there will be sections of narration and then sections that are chat logs or like artifacts from the internet talking about the characters. So you actually get to like, you get to see people like popping up in like fake Twitter messages where even those characters who are like watching the sport and are fans of the sport become characters in the story to an extent, which is really cool. And they do some of the like exposition and explaining about what is this sport. And it's all very largely inspired by Yuri on Ice, which is great because that fandom really sparked a renewed interest in figure skating and got a bunch of fans into figure skating fandom as well. So it sort of takes that movement and applies it to this whole AU concept. It's 100,000 words, which is, you know, great. It's amazing. It's by Lily Winterwood. It's called And So My Heart Beats Wildly. I can't recommend it enough. God, what else can I say? Because, you know, Raina, you did go on for a solid 10 minutes about Steven Universe. And so that means you owe me. You owe me. I get to talk about CQL for 10 minutes. Again. But the theme that we were going to do today speaking of going on about CQL for 10 minutes, our theme today was going to be what to binge while you're in quarantine.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. So we're each going to go back and forth and tell you a couple of the things, like just pitch, give you our elevator pitch of why you should watch this particular show or get into this particular fandom or ship. I'm going to just kick things off with one of my personal favorites, The Untamed. And you may be thinking, Stevie, you've talked about this like three times. And I'm like, listen, our listenership's not that big. And like, maybe some of you skipped the last two episodes. It's understandable. I have to be able to evangelize this at the drop of a hat at any given moment. I told my therapist about this show, okay? I'm not fucking around. All right, it's a pyramid scheme, and I'm going to win the pink car. I'm going to convert as many people as possible. So, Raina, are you ready to go through this again?
Sure.
Are you ready to hear this? Raina's heard this pitch from me so many times, and I do it different every time. You know, I've got to keep you guys on your toes. There's going to be some little tidbit in what I say that's going to inspire you to watch this, so I just got to keep talking. Okay. So, first of all, what have I said so far on this show? All right. The main character is basically like a supervillain. Like everyone agrees he's a supervillain. He dies. You find this out in like the first 30 seconds. He's dead. He has died.
Is there like a redemption arc of the supervillain?
It's not. I wouldn't call it a redemption arc so much as a context arc. Like you don't, he doesn't necessarily like he commits some war crimes that are never going to be absolved. You know what I mean? Cause like it happens when you're at war with like people with supernatural powers, like somebody's going to go a little too far. Somebody's going to get into necromancy and then like call in ghosts to psychologically torture a guy till he dies. But the thing that the story does is provide context for that. Like the guy who gets psychologically tortured is a like fucking psychotic asshole. Like the guy is just one of the worst, baddest characters on the show in terms of like the shit he will do, the people he will torment. So it's like, the main character is not going to get redeemed to the point where you're like, he did nothing wrong. He's a perfect cinnamon roll. Like, no. This dude is like a deeply burnt bagel at best. But
I like that metaphor.
Yeah, you get context, you know, and like you can still appreciate a crispy bagel. You just have to slather it in some cream cheese. I'm getting a little off topic. I might be hungry. So, God, what can I say about the show? The important thing that you need to know, it is hard to get into because it's in Chinese. There's going to be a learning curve there. You're going to have to like deal with reading subtitles. That's a thing. But the good news is if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to listen to Chinese and read subtitles, you have two more options, okay? Because there's a novel that's been fully translated and it's available online from the Scanlators. And there's a comic, which is ongoing, but it's basically following the novel. Another good thing this means is that if you finish the show and you're like, fuck, I need more, there's a novel. It's 700,000 words. Like, there is endless content. There is in-universe additional canon content that you can experience before you even dive into the fic. Speaking of the fic, you have multiple ships you can choose from. Like, there's not just the main two guys. They are amazing. My little crusty bagel boy and his, like, beautiful cream cheese lover, they're great. But you have some additional options. There are many stories in this story about two characters, one of whom is, like, an upstanding citizen, and one of whom is, you know, Crazy Pants McGee, and just will like go off and fucking kill people and slaughter people and make terrible choices. So you get to watch that happen multiple times in different ways, in like different contexts with different levels of success. Like if you want a good trash party, like a really good trash party, there's this entire arc where this dude, this like super villain level serial killer dude, how do I say this without spoiling it? He, sort of tricks his nemesis, who's like a nice sort of a himbo detective sort of character, tricks him into killing a bunch of people because his nemesis is blind. And it just goes downhill from there. I haven't even told you the worst part. There's another really great relationship where one character is like playing a long con and is the big bad of the entire show, and his boyfriend doesn't know it. So you get to watch that happen. I mean, who doesn't love these dynamics? There's something for everybody. Yeah, and the tropes are great. I mean, you get to have, you know, these lovely gentlemen all, when they're all in school together. You get to have them when they're all at war together. You get to have them when one of them is, you know, becoming a fucking necromancer, to put it mildly. And then you get to have them when they're like, they've been brought back from the dead. I mean, who doesn't love a good resurrection story? You get accidental baby acquisition. That happens in canon. Yeah. Raina, do you have any questions for me about this? Is there anything that's been simmering in your mind of like, what the fuck? I've got to know anything about this?
I mean, the villain thing was the main thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
I was confused about that.
Right, like, he's not a bad guy. It's just that the world is, he is the supervillain of the world. And then you get to find out, like, why and what his crimes were. Because, like, you see how everyone is like, this dude sucks, he's the worst. In the show, it's like, everyone is really, they spend time, like, having other characters talk about this dude and what a shithead he was. Then the show flashes you back for 30 episodes to give you context of how that happened. So you go into this like beautiful idyllic flashback with like, why are all of these people like happy and smiling young people now? Like their entire lives are going to fall apart. And then you just get to go through 30 episodes with that hanging over your head. It's great.
Ouch. Too much.
It's not too much. It's exactly the right amount. I just watched the finale with a friend of mine. We like live streamed it so that we could watch her face for the finale, and oh man, her face was beautiful. It was just full of horror, and it was great. She cried. It was wonderful. Cool. So there's my pitch. I promise I'm done talking about this show for the rest of the episode, I think. I think I'm done. All right, Raina, go. Elevator pitch. What should people binge?
So I guess most of these are going to be anime because that's where I live.
Woo!
So there's this show on Crunchyroll called Hands Off Izouken. And the elevator pitch is basically that it's three high school girls that one of them is basically an introvert that has wanted to create anime since she was young and draws everything that she sees. The second girl is like the model daughter of two famous actors, and she wants to create anime, but her parents want her to become an actress. And the third girl is basically friends with the first girl, but she is like obsessed with money and opportunities and decides to basically create a film club with the other two so that they can create anime, because the second girl can't join the anime club because her parents won't let her.
Aww.
Hence the name Izouken, which is Japanese for film club. So these three girls essentially create a film club just so that they can like create their own anime studio, essentially. And it's about their adventures of trying to become a club and then the projects they do within the club. And it's interesting because it's both a slice of life anime, but also a little bit of like a fantasy how-to. Fantasy how-to. Because like it talks about like how anime actually gets made. And then there's like sequences where like the girls are like absorbed into the anime that they're creating.
Oh, cute. And,
yeah. And like talking about like the creative process and how you come up with ideas for anime and like how things change throughout like your ideas of it and stuff like that.
Oh, that's really cute. I love that.
Yeah. And so like there isn't really any major ships in it besides friendship. But yeah, it's basically about teenagers following their dreams against all odds and just really enjoying creating things. And it like warms my heart. It makes me feel motivated to like do artist projects and
do art.
And just like what it's like to really, really care about what you're making.
Aw, that's precious.
Also, the opening is very, very catchy, and the animation sequence from the opening is based off of the Drake memes.
Wow. That's amazing. Oh, I love a good anime opening.
Somebody on Tumblr described it as the Ed, Edd n Eddy of anime.
Okay. That's a ringing endorsement.
Well.
No, I mean that. I mean, not sarcastically, I mean that.
Well, yes and no, because it basically, like, it's definitely not as outlandish as Ed, Edd n Eddy, but it is about, like, three girls that constantly are coming up with, like, new ideas and projects and are getting into trouble and, like, have to deal with, like, they're basically constantly running from the student council because the student council is kind of its own mini mafia.
Yeah.
And they're always in trouble with them for like something or other.
Amazing.
And the backgrounds are also really cool. Cause they sort of live in like this seaside town. That's like a mini fortress because it kept just, since it's on the water, it kept just growing in on top of itself.
Oh, cool. I love that.
Oh. So it's like, it's just very visually appealing and also like a simple plot that's very charming. And I made Dick Move watch all the episodes that are out with me.
Like Dick Move is a person, by the way, listeners.
Yes.
For any of our listeners that are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Dick Move is a person.
Dick Move is a person.
His name, stage name is Dick. First name Dick, last name Move.
We literally had a day where we just binged the entire thing. And he was like, I enjoyed this. Thank you for putting me through this.
That's beautiful. How many episodes is it?
It's going to be 12. The 11th episode just came out today. I haven't watched it yet. Mm-hmm. But it's all on Crunchyroll.
Nice.
So that's, it's called Hands Off Izouken. There's also a manga and a live action movie, though I haven't seen them yet.
Oh, cool. I always wanted to get into live action stuff and never did until now because I've been watching Chinese live action stuff.
I'm a little bit confused about the idea of a live action movie because with a manga and anime about anime, it at least somewhat makes sense. But I'm kind of wondering how they're, like, going to do these, like, fantasy scenes as a live-action movie.
Yeah, that's fair. I can see that being a little, like, you'd have to go back and forth between animation and live-action, maybe, which is always dicey.
I'm willing to see it. I'm willing to give it a chance. So.
Nice.
That is my elevator pitch.
Good pitch. Does this mean it's my turn yet? Is this my turn now? Okay, great.
It's your turn.
Cool. So I think the next thing that I would like to pitch, because I don't think I've talked about this much on the show at all, but a fandom I got into last year, Black Sails, which, Raina, you've heard me go on about this already. But a lot of people still don't like know what a hidden gem this show is. And the first episode is terrible. It's, like, not good. because Michael Bay was a producer on the show. And so the first episode is very like Michael Bay, male gaze, what the hell? But you wouldn't know from that. This show, canon gay show. And not just one pairing, not just like there's a couple of dudes that kiss, because there are, but there are canon bisexuals, canon lesbians. There are like obvious polycules. Like, this is an incredibly deeply queer show. Like, even in the last 10 minutes of the finale, they're introducing queer characters. There is like queer legacy ingrained in this show about pirates. It is a prequel to Treasure Island. Like, these guys were straight up like, you know, they must have been so drunk. And they were like, you know what we need? You know what we need? We need, like, it's like Treasure Island, but they're gay. And then they made that on television. It's all available on Hulu, which is great. And it's amazing. I mean, it is bloody. It is ridiculous. There's definitely people making questionable choices. There's a lot of ethically dubious shit that happens. But in a way that's like interesting and compelling, and it's not like, and like everybody is doing, like everybody is being forced into a position where they have to make ethically dubious choices. So if you're into like analyzing characters' motivations and you know, you're interested in what makes villains, what makes stories, like the show is weirdly like weirdly intelligent for a show about like murdering gay pirates. And it even goes into like what the characters are like aware of themselves as characters in the history and the story of piracy. So that sort of makes for an interesting meta level of the characters' choices and perceptions of themselves and each other. The fucking Blackbeard is a character. He's a fucking daddy. It's beautiful. The costumes are amazing. Everyone's dirty, which, you know, I love. and it's only three seasons. So like it's a good, like, it's not going to take you forever to get through. I don't think the seasons are even that long. Like, I remember watching the first few episodes and not being into it at all, and then the first season sort of, as it went on, it got more and more, the intrigue just kicked up a bunch of notches and the main character became more compelling and more interesting. And then going into season two, it just was like, I guess they got rid of Michael Bay and it just went balls to the wall homoerotic. There's like homoerotic flashbacks, there's kissing, there's like gay subtext. It's not even the text. Like, the amazing thing about the show is that it has gay subtext. Like, it starts out as just subtext that then you are told you are correct in your suspicions of the subtext, which is always a beautiful thing to be told. But then on top of that, it introduces new and additional subtext. Like, it's not a show that's just like, we're either going to have everything out there or everything hidden. It's a show that's like, we can do both. We can have subtlety in our language and the way that our characters interact. And that's really what fuels fandom, is like subtext. Like, we want to know more when we're not told everything. And this show does a really great job of telling you just enough to get you horny. And then go out and write some really great fan fiction about dirty fucking pirates. It's amazing. And like, it's also a show doesn't shy away from handling really morally perilous themes and actions. Like, there's a lot of, the show doesn't really do this in the first two seasons, but when it gets into season three, it's like, actually, I guess this starts in season two, but they do address slavery and piracy, because what some of the pirates were doing was slave cargo. And the show is like, yep, we've got to talk about that. And then they do. And they introduce a lot of Black characters more and more as you get into season three. And they become like a really important, like, intrinsically woven part of the plot, so that the show cannot exist without the discussion of this island of people who have, you know, found freedom from slavery. who are then sort of allied and against the pirates at different points in the story. And there's like black women characters. There's multiple characters, like women characters of color, multiple, like, it's interesting because I think the show doesn't handle everything perfectly, but that almost makes it a show that you want to keep talking about because you're like, okay, this show was willing to go here. What else can be done on television? So it was rewarding to see that a television show could be entertaining and interesting and, you know, moderately successful and have a pretty decent active fandom and not shy away from handling topics that are really hard to talk about in life, in fandom, and on TV. Yeah. Okay. So that's my pitch. I feel like it wouldn't be fair to talk about, it's not like fair to talk about Black Sails and just be like, it's gay pirates and it's woo, because like, it's a pretty heavy show. The finale in particular is extremely, it's like, there's some very morally shady stuff that happens, like leading up to the finale and in the finale. Like, it's not a show that's all sunshine and rainbows, but it talks a lot about like what it is to be marginalized in society and the cultures that come out of marginalization, which is not something I expected going into a Michael Bay produced show about pirates. So yeah,
there's more than explosions.
There is way more than explosions, but there are a lot of explosions.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Cool. Raina, it's your turn again.
Ooh, okay. So I've been back on my creepy shit, which
okay,
is not really that much of a reach for me.
What kind of creepy shit?
So basically I'm just gonna go through my Crunchyroll watch list right now.
Woo.
There's this show called Inspector, which is about two sort of humans that have mystical powers. One of them becomes sort of the goddess of wisdom for Japanese spirits and ghosts, because she ventured out as a small child and she ended up losing her, I want to say left, maybe right. She loses an eye and she loses a leg. In exchange, she gets the power to talk to yokai and ghosts and various spirits of Japanese folklore and becomes their goddess of wisdom.
All right.
So she basically becomes their sort of counselor and like solves their problems for them and just solves mysteries that have to do with deaths. She's sort of like a spirit detective, I guess is the best way to put it.
You know, I'm into spirit detectives.
Yeah.
By my first pitch.
And then her partner is this dude that ate the flesh of a Japanese mermaid. In Japanese folklore, mermaids give you immortality if you eat their flesh.
Okay. And so he was just like, yeah, I'm gonna do that?
No, he was made to.
Oh God.
His family has been so basically he comes from a family that has been obsessed with learning the future. There's a mythical Japanese monster called a kudon, where in folklore, right before a kudon dies, they can tell you one thing about the future. And so his family procured kudon flesh in an attempt to learn how to tell the future, but it's extremely poisonous to humans, and so most of the family died trying to eat it.
God.
And as a way to combat this, they gave him mermaid flesh. So the boy ate both Kudon and Japanese mermaid flesh, one so he could tell the future and one so he would be immortal. So every like injury, like anything that happens to this dude, he basically can come back to life and change the future in some way once he dies and then comes back to life.
Oh my God. That is some creepy bullshit, and I love it. What is this show called?
Inspector.
Okay.
It's a combination of, it's like a pun, so it's Inspector as in, like, detective, but it's spelled I-N-S-P-E-C-T-R. So, in and Spectre.
Spectre, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. And so, all of these, like, All the yokai spirits and ghosts are terrified of this dude because they're like, to them, he's a monster because he basically ate these supernatural beings to gain their powers. But the girl character has a crush on him.
Oh, classic. Oh my God. I kind of love this setup. I might actually watch this.
And it's like their dynamic is very interesting because, like, usually it's like in Japanese anime, it's usually the dude that's like always going after the girl. But in this case, the girl is very much going after this dude.
Hmm.
And is very much, no, I like you and I want to date you. And they have like a couple episodes in, they have a 2-year flash forward where at this point they are dating, but their dynamic is very bizarre because technically while they are dating, he still seems like, I don't want to say apathetic, but he's just kind of like, I guess apathetic is the best word to do it, because it's not that like he's dating her against his will. It's just that he kind of acts like whenever she gets super like crushy or lovey-dovey around him, he's like, okay, stop it.
I mean, I guess if he's a dude that dies regularly and can see the future, like it's got to be pretty difficult to get excited about anything.
Well, it's also the fact that like when they met, he was dating somebody else who dumped him because she like is extremely terrified of spirits.
Oh no.
And when they were like walking out one night, they ran across a kappa, and she was afraid of the kappa, but the kappa was afraid of him, and so she basically broke up with him because she was terrified. And then they end up working with his ex-girlfriend who has become a cop.
Oh no.
Time skip. And that becomes very interesting.
God, that's a lot. Wait, how many episodes is this?
I want to say it's like 8 or 9 so far. It hasn't ended yet.
Okay, so these are like ongoing. Like, you're giving us the fresh shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is like coming out as we speak.
Wow. I've never been like that much on the pulse of anime before. Good for you.
Well, having a Crunchyroll subscription means that I basically get access to all of the new shit that Crunchyroll is willing to sub and dub.
Cool. Now Crunchyroll has to pay us for that commercial, right?
I don't know. I mean, I only pay them $8 a month, so it's fine. but yeah, so it's like, yeah, so basically these two people solve spiritual crimes together and murders and things like that.
Oh my God. Just like in my favorite show.
While also having a very bizarre, yet I guess somewhat romantic relationship.
Mine have a more romantic relationship, I'll take that, but still.
I mean, the interesting thing is that while he does act very apathetic towards her advances, like, they definitely have a rapport, and, like, he does care about her, and they do trust each other, and he's, like, one of the people that actually gets to see her without, because, like, so she has a fake eye and a fake leg so that she doesn't freak people out about her disability. And he's one of the few people that does get to see her without her fake eye or fake leg.
Wow.
And doesn't freak out about it.
That sounds, I'm really intrigued by this show. I might actually have to watch this.
They have started, so it, most of it is on Crunchyroll in Japanese. They've started to dub it. So there's both a sub and a dub version on Crunchyroll.
Nice.
So you can pick your poison.
Awesome.
But I think it's very interesting, and it definitely, like, has a supernatural element that I enjoy.
Nice.
Cool. Somewhat gory, but not too gory, because again, this guy dies several times.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's not really anything that you wouldn't see in your typical anime.
Yeah. Well, we've had three pieces of, you know, somewhat gory content. And one piece of, like, nice girls making anime content. I think that's a good that's a good mix to throw at our listeners.
Yes.
Two animes, one Chinese drama, one pirate romp with surprisingly heavy undertones. Yeah.
And I went on about Steven Universe.
And Steven Universe. If you haven't watched that, you can always watch Steven Universe.
It's true. There are so many seasons.
Very nice.
But yes.
Awesome. I think that's a wrap. I think we've given our listeners some food for their quarantine. Yeah, go forth and consume media, my friends. Tis the season.
It is the season of quarantines and watching parties.
Yeah, I've seen people being like, man, after this quarantine, 9 months from now, there's going to be so many babies. And I'm like, bold of you to assume. Like, no way. I will be getting none. I will be watching television.
No babies.
Yeah, just... I mean, that's impossible anyway, but... Like, bold of you to assume that the entire universe is just going to be, like, at home getting some. Like, what? Not all of us have live-in sexual partners. That's, what? What about all of the poor fuckers out there who are going to have to be social isolating from their partners and significant others and such? Think of...
The only person I live with is my cat.
Right. And I have two roommates who are just roommate people. You know, like, Twitter needs to chill.
Twitter always needs to chill.
Twitter needs to just sit back and watch some anime. That's what Twitter, yeah. That's my prescription for Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all of you for joining us on this weird, different format for our podcast today. I hope you are all healthier than I am. And not too scared, and I hope that your immune systems are, you know, functional, as functional as they can be. I hope your immune systems are functioning at their optimal capacities. Yeah, it's a time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I got wrecked from this, but I was wrecked going in, so.
It's just continued wreckage.
Continued wreckage.
Continued wreckage.